regular. Hello, hello, hello. So glad you're here. So we're in a series, and it's a series I did back in 2016 or 15, I think. And it's called Guardrails, and it's based off a series that Andy Stanley did. And he had a book titled that same thing. And so I've taken some of his some of his ideas, and I've also today, these are kind of a new one. This is not something I taught the last time, so it's all meant for married couples. So if you're married, this is for you. If it's if you're getting ready to get married, this is for you. If you're single, this is for you. Even though you're not married, you say, "Well, it's for married couples." Yes, it is. It is some really good primer stuff for you to take on. So if you got your Bibles, turn to Hebrews 13:4. You can see our outline on Facebook. It's also go there, and it's in the U version. It's all my outline that you're going to see on here is there also. So we're in week 4 of our series called Guardrails. And what is a guardrail? Is essentially a system designed to keep a vehicle from straying somewhere that it shouldn't go. And we've said that repeatedly. It's a thing that keeps us from veering someplace where we're not supposed to be. And so we use that as a guardrail, as a standard of behavior for us, as a standard of the way that God would like us to act. And so we place these guardrails in our life so we don't go veering over into some place we're not supposed to go. And so we're going to look at some preventative techniques today. When it comes to marriage, when it comes to people who are together, how do you build a stronger marriage by setting up guardrails? And that's what we're going to talk about. So please don't check out if you're not married, because it's still good stuff for you today. So let's get right into it. Hebrews 13:4 says this: marriage should be honored by all, and husbands and wives must be faithful to each other. God will judge those who are immoral and commit adultery. God says he wants us to be faithful, and he says that he will judge those who are immoral and commit adultery. That's two very large things today. One is he wants us to be faithful, and the other is he's going to judge us according to our immorality. It's a big deal. So there's a problem, and the problem is that affairs happen today more than any other time in history. Married people that should be celebrating 60 years cannot stay together because they are enticed out of a marriage and out of a relationship that they should never be. So what causes affairs? I want to spend a little bit of time. My lesson goes in three parts today. What causes affairs? What can we do about it? And then how do we set these guardrails? So let's get into this. What causes affairs? And even if you're not married, this is incredible to keep on to, because it's something you can build into your life. I believe there's 7 cliffs that you need to look at when it comes to building a stronger marriage. And the first cliff is this. It's a very simple one. Just a very simple phrase: unmet needs. When you have unmet needs in a relationship, especially in a marriage relationship, what happens is you're opening the door to temptation. An unmet need leaves you ripe for temptation. And I'm not just talking sexually. I'm talking all the way around the board, emotionally. So many different ways that we take the things that God intended for us to meet in each other, because we understand, and I want to say this right at the beginning, it's so important to understand that if you're looking to your spouse to meet all your needs, it'll never happen, right? Okay, so let's get that out of the way. But your spouse does meet some very specific needs in you. God, of course, is where we want to keep our eyes focused. God, of course, is where we want to keep our eyes always looking forward when it comes to that. But God wants us to meet needs for our spouse. That's why he got us together. That's why he put you with your she and he. He put you together to do that. So unmet needs are a big cliff that cause people to look elsewhere. Another one is unfulfilled expectations. Many of us go into marriage, no matter whether we've been together for a long time or not, and we have these ideas of what marriage should look like. And we have these ideas of the things that should be going on in that marriage. And when they don't, we immediately have a problem because you begin to feel bitter, you begin to feel cheated, and you start comparing and looking at your spouse, and you look at some other spouse, and you go, "But look what they have, look what they're doing, look what's going on in their life." And then immediately the temptation door is open. And when you start comparing your spouse to anybody else, you're always going to get in trouble because your spouse is not going to live up to whoever it is you're comparing him to, because that's foolishness. That's foolishness, the Bible says. Don't do it. Unfulfilled expectations always lead us over a cliff. What's another cliff that's very important for us? I think it's underdeveloped self-esteem. And what I mean by that, it's an issue that the way you look at yourself, one of the ways you can build your marriage is to build up her self-esteem and his self-esteem. And you have to do that to each other, because if you don't, if you're making it a competition, like some of us tend to do, if you're making it, then what happens is you begin to erode and tear each other apart at the seams. And the very place that God intended for you to begin to make that marriage stronger, what it does is it begins to crumble, it begins to fall apart. It's so important that we build each other up and we not tear each other down. Even jokingly, so many men, I'm one of them, can joke. The first couple years, I drove my wife crazy joking. I really was joking about 99% of the time. But the 1% of the time always got me in trouble. Always got me in trouble. And then she didn't know how to take my laughter and my jokes. And so I had to learn how to do that and do it in a way that it didn't make it seem like I was tearing her down. And we all have to look for ways to do that. Another cliff that's important is unresolved conflict. And boy, this happens after you've been married about 2 or 3 years. I know it happens 2 or 3 weeks, but unresolved conflict is, of course, it's something that an issue comes and it starts and you don't handle it. It becomes the proverbial elephant in the room. And you know it, she knows it, and it's there, and it's going, and nobody cares. You hear it trump, you hear it sound, but you just let it go. You do not do anything with it. God intended for you not to take conflict and sweep it under the rug, because when you do, you know what conflict finds under the rug? Other conflict, more conflict. And then we push more conflict, and we push it down the road, and we push it down the road, and all of a sudden there's this great big woolly beast in the middle of our living room, and we're going, "I can't stand you anymore. Can't stand you." Unresolved conflict. It's a cliff. Causes lots and lots of people to look other places. Another cliff out of the seven is this: uncontrolled thoughts. Not taking the things that come into your mind and doing the right things with them. We are being fed, as I talked about last week, a diet of immorality every week. Every time you turn on the TV, every time you flip through something on your phone, you're being given a diet of immorality. And it's very important that we understand that what goes in here always comes out other places in the body. It just pushes its way out. The way you think determines the way you feel, and the way you feel determines the way that you act. I didn't say this last week, but I need to say it today. I didn't go into it, but I need to go into it this morning. here's what I'd like to kind of put an addendum onto something I said last week. Lust, I was talking about lust last week. Lust is not arousal. Lust is not arousal. Lust is not an appreciation or admiration. If you're hungry and you walk by a big steak dinner, it is okay to look at that steak and go, I would like to have a steak about right now, okay? Because that's an admiration. That is a healthy thing to say, that makes me hungry. God made man to be attracted to women, And attraction is not lust. It is not lust. Lust is when you begin to linger and you begin to dwell and you mentally commit things in your mind and you begin to think, what if we touched? Where if we touched? When did we touch? And those kinds of things, then it becomes lust. But attraction is not necessarily a bad thing. God made us, men and women, to be attracted to each other. He wanted us to be attracted to each other. Now, as we talked about last week, we have to be careful how we put the package out there, women and men, how the package is dressed up and undressed, because if it's in a different package and a package that maybe shouldn't be out there, then it's attracting something it shouldn't be attracting. So it's very, very important. Lust is focused on one person. And women and men in general, when it happens, when a man sees a good-looking woman, it's natural for a man to be attracted to that woman. Same with women. But lust is what you do with it. Lust is when you begin to focus on it for the purpose of planning in your mind some way to go further with it. That's the best way I can put it. I didn't talk about that last week, but I wanted to say that today for any young man or any man in a place that wants to beat yourself up because you notice women or woman who notices men. Because noticing is different from lust. And that's the point I want to leave you with today as we talk about that. Let's move to the next cliff. Okay, the next cliff is an unprotected lifestyle. And we talked a little bit about this last week. Living a life where you have improper relationships with the opposite sex. If you're a man, you shouldn't be riding in a car with, and you're married, you shouldn't be riding in a car with another woman. You shouldn't do dinner with another woman. It's an unprotected lifestyle. You're putting yourself in harm's way. When you're tired and when your defenses are down, which is most days for all of us, our whole culture is tired. Our whole culture is so wiped out socially, mentally, physically, and that's one of the reasons I'm going over this is because I think the last year and a half has put America and its church into a tailspin, because when you're so overwhelmed with the details of the day that aren't really things that you put your hand on, but that are details all around you, what you do is you get attacked. And it's an open door for the devil to come in and do things and to rob you of your joy and your peace and your patience. And when your defenses are down, that's when the devil always comes in. Important. It's important, church, to understand that if you have an unprotected lifestyle, you're running towards a cliff. Lastly, another last cliff that I want to make note of today is basically unreliable commitment. An unreliable commitment. What do I mean by that? I want to talk to just married people for just a second. Most of you, when you got married, you made a commitment, I believe, to each other and to God. And you said in that presence of whoever was there, you said, I will stay with Dippy all of my life until I die. You made a verbal commitment to each other and to God. And it's very, very important to understand that so many people, when they go into that commitment, they take it more lightly than what they really think about. And every couple I marry, I try to really say to them, please understand your commitment here. It is a lifer. It is a lifetime commitment. It is something death do you part. I know, I hear that all the time. No, I can't tell you how many times in my own specific life, I've said this before right here from this place, that the reason I'm not divorced after 42 years, it comes down to many times that if you boil it all down, I made a promise to God and I said I would. And that's the only reason I stayed with Brenda. And I know it's the only reason she stayed with me, because I wasn't worth staying with. And sometimes she wasn't worth staying with, believe it or not. And so what I'm saying to you is you got to have a commitment that is rock solid, is built on it. Doesn't matter who comes along. Doesn't matter how bad things get. I will be committed to you. And if you don't have that commitment, you are going to go over the cliff. I understand. Some of you go, I did that and I did that. And I'm not banging. I'm just telling you, I want to encourage you. Recommit yourself today. If you're wavering, recommit yourself. If you're going, you know, this lug, this lady, I just don't. Make a recommitment today to do that. That'll start your guardrail process. So those are the cliffs. Real simply, very quickly, the next part of our lesson is this: how do we fall? Okay, there's the cliffs. Then we know they're there. We know all those things that we just talked about. Everybody, I didn't tell any of you anything new, I don't think. But let's talk about how do we fall then? How does it happen? Because it happens. You know, a lot of us in this room are married a couple times, 2-3 times. How do we fall? How do affairs happen? The process of immorality is explained very simply. And most people don't understand this, but James is screaming about it in James 1, 14 and 15. And the Living Bible says this: temptation is the pull of a person's own evil thoughts and wishes. And these evil thoughts always lead to evil actions. So it starts with a thought, and then it comes out as an action. Okay, there's how affairs start. Comes in the mind, and it comes out of the body. Affairs never just happen overnight. You just don't fall into an affair. People don't instantly just get immoral. It happens over time. There's usually a series of events that come about that make you want to push away from the table where you've been having your supper, so to speak, and you want to go to somebody else's supper table and figure out what their table is like and figure out what is going on in their program. So it's very important that we understand how we fall. It starts with the thoughts and it goes to the actions. So let's talk about a couple things in that vein, and then we'll close it up with the guardrails really quick. Goes like this. Number one, accepting sinful thoughts into your mind. That's the first thing. You cannot accept the thoughts in your mind. Yes, they come in your mind, but you have to tell them to go. The Bible says you have to tell them, leave me. In fact, last week we said you need to flee your evil thoughts. What if we, you know, that thought is, what does she smell like? What does she, you know, what would she, if I touch? What, those thoughts have got to be eliminated from your mind. Here's another way we fall, by non-physical involvement, by this. Just talked to my brother yesterday, two preachers over in his area where he's at camp, he works at camp, they got let go from their church for an emotional affair. They didn't have an affair, but they had an emotional affair. And the church said, we can't have you here. And I don't know how you get caught in an emotional affair, but they were caught in an emotional affair. And so it happens, and they lost their job. They lost their job because they even though it wasn't physical, they still had consequences of that going on. My professor at Johnson University, which is, used to be a Bible college, used to say this: adultery always begins in the head long before it begins in the bed. And that is so true. It happens way before anything happens in a bed situation. So accepting thoughts in your mind, non-physical emotional involvement, and physical involvement, of course, of getting physically involved. I don't even need to go there, but that's when the line has been crossed, touching, kissing. If you're married, they don't belong to you. If you're married, that person is not yours. You have yours there at your table, and that is the only one at your table. There is no one else supposed to be at your table, not on a screen, not on a TV, not anywhere. No one else should be in your program except your spouse. And then lastly, the way we fall is we rationalize the affair. We rationalize that somebody else is better than what I have because what I have just isn't cutting it. What I'm married to is not making me happy. What I'm married to is does this, 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 and this. And I have a whole list of things that I can run in my mind. Can you imagine? It's like saying something like this. You know, Jeff, and I've heard this from so many people, but Jeff, I'm only human. I understand. But do you want to hear that from somebody that just murdered you or murdered your friend or took your stuff? I'm only human, you know? That flies for a second, but then you've got to take personal responsibility. But I have needs. I know. But there's other ways to meet your needs than to do that, right? Well, I don't know. So we rationalize and we step in places that we never were meant to step. Those are the ways we fall. Okay, now let me throw up the guardrails real quick for you. Here they are. If you want to write anything down, you can write some of these down. You know these things. You know them, but you've got to decide as a couple, we're going to put these guardrails up. Number one, make a commitment to God's standard of morality. If you don't take God's standard of morality, you will fall for what the culture says. The culture says everything that I'm talking about is phooey. The culture says you're stupid, Jeff. Don't, you're stupid, church. Why listen to this guy up here? Everything he's saying, the culture says, it's okay. You deserve this. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to have somebody that's really good, you know, at supper. You really deserve that. And that's not right. You've got to make a commitment to God to decide, Lord, I'm going to live according to your standard. I don't often quote old dead guys, but this old dead guy, Augustine, it was going through a quote that I saw a couple weeks ago, and I wrote it down. And it kind of relates to this making a commitment to God's standard of morality. Because most of us, when we come to this, we go, yes, except when something better comes along. And here's what Augustine said. Lord, deliver me from lust, but not today. And that's the way a lot of us live. That's the way a lot of us live. Because the immediate becomes more important than the thing that's long term. And so many people give up the long term for the immediate. We give up our birthright for a bowl of stinking soup. My goodness, friends, we've got to think long term. Just like kids who off themselves today, just like kids who kill themselves, they're not thinking long term. They're not thinking how it's going to affect their mom and dad. They're not thinking how it's going to affect their friends. All they're thinking about is today. And it's the same way. In marriage, you're thinking about today. So many of us get caught up into that. Here's another guardrail. Maintain your marriage. It is the worst thing in the world to maintain your marriage. I have a campground down there, and you know about my campground. And I'm getting old, and it's tougher and tougher and tougher to maintain that thing. It requires so much work. Yesterday, the roof started leaking in the kitchen, and I'm like, oh, right, what? There's just so many things. Maintain is the worst. But it is also, if you don't take care of it when it starts leaking, bad, bad poopy char starts happening in your life. My son, my grandson says poopy char to everything. It's all poopy char. Okay, you're like, what's poopy char? It's all.